It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go. We are off and running on a brand new broadcast week to mark the second half of the month of September 2017. It is the 18th day of September 2017. This is The Horn. This program is, of course, live. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and we're live almost every weeknight at 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. 3 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. I am the least vacation-taking progressive talk host out there. Hell, I may be the least vacation-taking talk host at all. But anyway, I'm here, and you're there. And so we're set for another 3 hours of conversation radio. Of course, conversation radio becomes a lot more fun if you're, say, hanging out in the Horn chat room. Which is free, costs nothing. Nothing here costs anything. You don't have to pay for access to the archives, access to the podcast, access to the stream. It's all free. What isn't free is stuff like groceries and electricity and gasoline and insurance and that kind of thing. Anyway, everything at the Horn is free, including access to the chat room, which, during the 3 hours in which this program is live, is a rollicking, fine, good time. And if you click on chat room and you pick yourself out a screen name and a password, you will be immediately met and greeted by the likes of Anatole and Hoghead and Jug of Punch and VT Blom and more folks as they wander in here in the next few minutes and during the course of the program. And, of course, you will be capably moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, has folded space to enjoy the balmy, pleasant, temperate confines of the man cave. Yes, you will also be moderated by all around great guy and midweek utility pinch hit infielder Steve from Georgistan. So it couldn't be. And hey, there's Kid Mark. Welcome to the room, Kid Mark. So, you know, just enjoy it. Enjoy everything you can about the whole conversation radio Horn experience. Mm-hmm. This is, of course, a listener-supported broadcast operation, and it and those who support the broadcast are particularly vivacious, made particularly healthy and strong. By what? That's right, by climactic kohlrabi, only from Horn Labs. You know, to this day, I can't stand to eat kohlrabi, and the only way I can get my daily kohlrabi intake is by taking a handful of dried up kohlrabi in capsule form, only from Horn Labs. And you know what? It's a real bargain. If you act now, and operators are standing by, if you act now, you'll get two bottles for the price of two bottles of climactic kohlrabi. Climactic kohlrabi from Horn Labs. Yes. Yes, indeed. We'll be talking about that through the course of the program. Climactic kohlrabi. You'll be glad you did. And, of course, since that is completely a bullshit product, as are all the products from Horn Labs, we actually need your support. We try to raise $200 every evening, whether we need it or not. And, of course, there are big thanks to go out this weekend. Big thanks indeed. Thank you very kindly to Kurt. And thank you very kindly to Cat Mountain in Oregon. Thank you very kindly to Jamie. Thank you to Jamie in California. And thank you very much to Adam. Thanks, Adam, in Missouri. All of those are subscribers who set it and forget it and just keep things going through the course of the month and the months. Thanks also go out to Nancy. Nancy in New York. Thank you, Nancy. And thanks to Arthur in Arizona. Thank you, Arthur. Program is also brought to you, of course, by Laborman out in far New Mexico way, because that's, you know, there's no real climactic kohlrabi, although it will, I'm sure it will help Laborman with his boner. I mean, it's his job. He has to ask, but he isn't in the room yet, so, but you get it. All of that goes, it's like, you know, these are the sponsors of the program. And so I try to make sure that I thank each and every subscriber with every evening that that rolls around. And let's see, thanks also go out to Gary in Oregon. Thank you to Glenn. Thank you to Glenn in Rochester. Thanks to Timothy in Arizona. And thank you very kindly over here, probably only 8 or 9 hours away, to our good friend Reinhard. Thank you, Reinhard, in Virginia. Thank you one and all for helping to keep Progressive Conversation Radio on the air. If you would like to become a subscriber, it's really quite easy. You just open the Contribute tab at headonradionetwork.com. You click the little box there for PayPal that says make this a recurring monthly donation and put the number in and you're done. And, of course, we don't have 100. We'd like to have 400 at $10 a month. We don't have 100 yet. But we do have... we got a nice little core group, and if we could expand that core group, then I get to stop doing this stuff, because I get a kick out of coming up with a fake, bullshit, bogus nutritional supplement every evening. Have you tried climactic kohlrabi? Probably not, because it's just now hitting the bullshit nutritional supplement market, but you really, really, really should. And at $60, at $29.95 for one bottle and $60 for two, that second bottle costs you an extra 10 cents. But, you know, who's right? Yeah. You're going to love it. Climactic kohlrabi. All kidding aside, this is how we keep the program on the air. And all kidding aside, that means that we only actually have to raise, we don't have to raise $200 this evening. It would be nice if we did. It would be nice if we could get, you know, say, 20 new subscribers at $10 a piece. And remember, if you don't like PayPal, because there are people who don't, if you don't like PayPal, just go over to Patreon, patreon.com, Patreon.com/Bob Kincaid. And you'll find the Patreon campaign over there. And you'll you'll find that to be easy, too. Now, those come out only on the first of the month. So it doesn't matter if you sign up on the 18th, the 13th, the 29th. It only comes out on the first of the month. So if that makes it easier for you to budget, that's great. That's what it's there for. So thanks very kindly to all of our subscribers. We'll try to raise $200 this evening so that everything the subscribers have done can sort of keep, you know, trucking along. But we'd be lost without them. We really, really would be. Of course, the mailing address for those who prefer the United States Postal Service is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801, with a simple reminder. 1, checks and money orders made payable to The Horn. Don't send cash. Things tend to disappear in mail processing facilities. This is a lesson we have learned the hard way in the past. So there's that, too. So that takes care of all of that stuff. And gosh, that's only been slaughtered 11 minutes of the program. So, yeah, we'll, yeah. Okay. All right. Wow. Jug of Punch in the chat room mentioning they've harvested 93 pounds of tomatoes so far this season. They're peeled and in the freezer. And Jug of Punch says, sauce cooking and canning will begin soon. Yummy. And it's been a busy year up at the Jug of Punch Mansion. He says, we harvested 60 pounds of raspberries this season. They were made into syrup and jelly, and they were canned. Whoa. Just thinking about things like... there's nothing bad you can do with a fresh tomato, whether it's just to eat it like an apple or slices on burgers and sandwiches and stuff, or make it into tomato juice or homemade tomato sauce. Tomato porn. Be still my heart. Oh! Yeah. Bacon, lettuce, and tomato sandwiches with Benton's Bacon out of East Tennessee. Fresh tomatoes, good sourdough bread. Oh. Sorry, I'll try not to have to. Breathe. And a reminder, of course, everybody who subscribes gets a bumper sticker. Yeah, fresh load of envelopes going out this week for subscribers I haven't gotten to yet. And one other thing, if you're subscribing and you haven't, and you think you're subscribing, you might, but it, double check, make sure that you are, because for some reason or another, sometimes PayPal just, and they go away, and people don't know. And then I get an email saying, Bob, did you, and no, I didn't. Well, I didn't cancel it. Well, apparently PayPal did. So I don't know how it works. I got nothing. But maybe just have an eye on that. All right. I think that takes care of the, that takes care of the housekeeping and so forth. So, we've got a program to do now, don't we? Yes. So what does that mean? Well, it means that it's Monday.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Step right up. Hurry, hurry, hurry. You will not believe your eyes. You will not believe your ears. Mostly your ears won't believe, because this here is a radio program. It's Moran Monday on the Horn. We've got them all for you right here, friends and neighbors, aunts and uncles, kiddies and cousins. We've got them all. Just a few steps off the main carnival midway, here stands this thin cybernetic veil of canvas. Just a few mere yards away from where, only moments ago, you were throwing ping pong balls at goldfish bowls in hopes of winning your very own iguana. We wait. The Moran Monday tent. An amazing, mind-blowing experience, the likes of which beggar description. Yes, indeed, yes, indeed. Behind these thin cybernetic veils of canvas, we have them all. We've got your birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, birchers, booger eaters, libertarians, republicans, maggots! We've got them all. You can't tell the maggots without a program, the Morans without a program, and this here program tells the Moran maggots. Yes, indeed. You just can't tell them much. And it's a bargain at only less than 16 cents per hour of programming for a $10 a month subscriber. Well, there's not much out there that you can get for 16 cents that you'd actually want to have. But the Horn is right there for you at that kind of limited and, in fact, reduced cost. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Moran Monday on the Horn. Head for the hills. You'll be up to your armpits in Morans. And you will. You really, really, really will. Well, let's put it this way. If you're going to stay with this program for the next couple of hours, we got Morans. We had a weekend. That's why Moran Monday happens on Monday, because they just sort of stack up and back up, and then it's like, you know, opening a tap, and all the Morans come running out. They run, they walk, they crawl. Sometimes they goose step. Yes. And oh my goodness gracious. Yep. So let's begin, Moran-wise, with a print journalism Moran. I had to do a little digging around to find out exactly who she was. I knew I'd heard her name somewhere before, but I didn't have exactly, she didn't really light up any neon or anything. We're talking here about Megan McArdle, who, over at Bloomberg View, was... a little breaking news, by the way, just before airtime. The Equifax hack happened almost 5 months earlier, or they suffered a hack almost 5 months earlier than the date that they had previously announced. Jumps. Yeah, you know, that's one of those things that happens with, we folks out here just trying to live our lives in the economic miracle that is the anarcho-capitalism of the United States of America. We don't pay attention to stuff. We just, we want to just get along. But then somewhere along the way, maybe we want to buy a new car or one of those fancy Internet of Things refrigerators that now costs $3,000 and will tell you when, the oil's low in your automobile because it's talking to the computer in your automobile, and your automobile's talking to your coffee maker, and your coffee maker's talking over the Internet to your robot vacuum cleaner. Right. I was just trying to catch up on some of this modern madness over the weekend and found out that at one point in time, who was it? Now you can just look it up. At one point in time, one outfit was hacked through their fish tank. No shit, hacked through their fish tank. But at this point in time, we are collectively all we're all morons. Yeah, there it is. A smart fish tank left a casino vulnerable to hackers. All I did was I searched hacked through fish tank, and there it is. Hackers attempted to steal data from a North American casino through a fish tank connected to the internet, according to a report from a security firm. A fish tank. That's right. But that's kind of neither here nor there. Our stuff is eminently hackable, and we don't really pay attention to, and we're suckers for gizmos. And then one day we go to, because we want to buy one of those, you know, hackable refrigerators. And we find out that, you know, you find out that you can't get the credit necessary to buy the refrigerator because, you know, because Equifax or TransUnion or Experian says you can't. There aren't a hell of a lot of lending agencies out there that are willing to say, well, you know, those people are assholes. We're going to override them. And it doesn't matter if it's a small local bank or a great big ginormous bank. It doesn't matter if you have no defaults in your... Nothing. If Equifax and Experian and TransUnion say you can't borrow money, you can't borrow money. Like I've said before, if I didn't know better and if I was willing to buy into it, I'd almost think that Equifax and TransUnion and Experian... No, that's 8. EQUIFAX. That's 7. Nope. Nobody's got any sixes in their... it sounds real antichristy, doesn't it? Or you want to buy a car, but if they say you can't, you can't. And that means that... And that's all based on the fact that they are credible purveyors of data about you, even though at no point in time you never, ever, ever sought a data or business relationship with them, they get to decide whether or not you can borrow money. And now it turns out that they can't even keep that data secure. And it's probably happened, and they just don't know it, it's probably happened to Experian, and it's probably happened to TransUnion. And it really doesn't matter if it hasn't, because now somebody's got your data, probably, and who knows what's going on. But God forbid we should have a corporate death penalty. Ooh, not a corporate death penalty. Ooh. And God forbid we should extend that corporate death penalty to the precious shareholders. The shareholders should never be at fault. Fuckers, you invested in them. You sat there and played the game where there's no actual democracy taking place inside corporate governance. You're willing participants in that, but, oh, we can't hurt the shareholders. Bullshit. A corporate death penalty that erases the corporation, cans the workers, and erases the share value. Goodbye, money. Goodbye, shareholder dollars. Oh, no. Because, again, like I said before, the whole point is to prevent this kind of thing from happening and therefore make everybody in the capitalist process accountable, from the tiniest shareholder all the way up to the board of directors and the CEO, with middle management and hourly workers in between, all making sure that, you know, Equifax doesn't do what Equifax did. Granted, it might tighten some assholes, but in the long run, I think it would be good for the country. Because suddenly, corporations might grow consciences. It'd be kind of like a cultured pearl. You know, some pearls or some oysters will just get that little grain of sand in there and they'll begin excreting pearly goodnesses out of whatever it is that an oyster excretes from. And a little bit, and more and more, and you got a pearl. But that's the hard way. Sometimes you can just go down and you can ease the shell open a little bit and put the little bit of sand and a little grain of sand in there in the oyster, and the oyster will then go to work pearl making. Well, that's what this would be like. It's culturing some corporate conscience instead of waiting for them to grow one themselves. Yeah. So that. But anyway, that's not our Moran nomination. That's just once again finding out that Equifax, whose entire business model is based upon their being truthful about your data, couldn't even tell the truth about when they got hacked, and then had executives who were dumping stock for all they were worth. Yeah, I know. So that makes us morons for letting places like Equifax continue to exist. You know, just saying. But no, our lead moron nominee is a woman by the name of Megan McArdle, who, when I looked her up, is apparently some sort of libertarian type. And remember, libertarians are just Republicans who want to smoke dope. Aqua Buddha, Aqua Buddha. Yeah, you remember, Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. I'm rich, I'm rich, I'm comfortably well off, I'm socially secure. Yes. Libertarians who want everything for them because they pull themselves up by their own bootstraps every goddamn morning and don't let anybody tell you different, because, you know, they don't need any society around them. They're rugged individualist libertarians. That needs some reverb. Rugged individualist libertarians. Yes, it sounds much more impressive that way, doesn't it? Well, Megan McArdle's one of those rugged individual libertarians. But she still has a nasty authoritarian streak. So, you know or don't know, don't care, that a little right-wing troll named Ben Shapiro, in a deliberate act of provocation to try to get people to respond violently, he spoke at Berkeley last week. And Megan McArdle wrote an opinion piece that, for reasons that pass understanding, was published at Bloomberg, in which she blamed Antifa for the fact that, because Bruga Bruga Antifa, the law enforcement tab was something like $600,000, and they brought out the concrete barriers, and they got permission to pepper spray the living bejesus out of a bunch of young people, and they locked down the Cal campus, and they cleared out the Cal campus, and 9 people got arrested. Shit. There's more than nine people arrested at an Alabama game on any given Saturday in Tuscaloosa. But I don't see libertarian Megan McArdle writing breathless op-ed pieces about how it's all the Crimson Tide fans' fault. But there it is. Right there in pixels on my screen. How relieved should we be that this is what it takes to maintain order in the face of a speech? Because, see, Megan McArdle, being a libertarian, a rugged individualist libertarian who's just a Republican that wants to smoke dope, to make the connection, or not make the connection, I suppose, that when little right-wing turds like Ben Shapiro, little trolls like Milo Yiannopoulos, show up in places that have decidedly liberal leanings, that it's a deliberate act of incitement. The cops were there, all $600,000 worth of them, and they laughed all the way home to cash their overtime checks. Suckers! The cops were there, not because, you know, they happened to just be out there $600,000 worth every Tuesday or Wednesday or Thursday evening or whatever, but because Ben Shapiro deliberately tries to incite violence from his opponents. Just like the march in Charlottesville was an act of deliberate incitement, which, of course, is not constitutionally protected speech. But Megan McArdle, Moran nominee, gets the vapors over Antifa. You know, very few people like Megan McArdle have bothered to note that were it not for Antifa, a lot of the peaceful protesters in Charlottesville might have been far more grievously harmed than they were when the Nazis marched over there. Antifa actually held back violent, racist, white supremacist extremists in Charlottesville. Does Megan McArdle write an article saying, "Thank you, Antifa, for stopping the Nazis"? Oh, fuck no! Because Megan McArdle gets the vapors over Antifa. Jesus, this is a whole bunch of stupid writing. How relieved should we be that this is what it takes to maintain order in the face of a speech? On the one hand, it shows that even in the heart of Antifa territory, police and authorities that are actually determined to confront them can do so. You know, if they bother to show up. That's good to know, and gives the lie to chicken authorities who would give Antifa a heckler's veto. A heckler's veto. That's not what we're talking about in the case of these little two-legged fecal events, people like Ben Shapiro and Milo Yiannopoulos, who are trying to actually get people to respond violently, inciting violence from the people who disagree with them. I mean, if you sit there and you just poke somebody and you poke them and you poke them and you poke them and you poke them, how long is a person supposed to be poked? Before they finally deck you. Because, you know, sometimes words have violent import. There's even a legal term, fighting words. To quote a line from The Exorcist, it wasn't that The Exorcist...
Yeah, your mother sucks cocks in hell!
Well, those are fighting words. And in some parts of the country, if you say that to Cletus, you should not be surprised when Cletus cleans your clock. Because they have the same effect as a struck blow. Carol Baker with a question. How did I get the label of Antifa? Every single person on the left is violent? Antifa? I'm the reason we can't have nice things? Baggers could carry guns to an MLK parade and there was never police protection. But we're the violent ones. Check. I never got my Antifa union card, Carol says. I never even got the memo. We didn't get espresso. But no, Megan McArdle, Moran, is more worried about Antifa bashing windows than she is in Nazis bashing skulls. And nice job there, Megs, calling out police organizations that don't respond with the militarized police gear in such instances. Hint, it wasn't Antifa that made the police in Charlottesville run. You know, got all Romulan and turned tail and all you saw was assholes and elbows. There's our obligatory Star Trek reference of the evening. It was the Nazis, Megs. She continues, and yet those authorities could be forgiven for feeling daunted, even aggrieved, when they realize that every speaker Antifa doesn't like means vast sums and considerable effort expended on turning your public spaces into a demilitarized zone. Hey, sister, the only people militarizing those fucking zones are the Nazis who bring their goddamn open carry freedom protectors. And the police themselves, who are militarized. I mean, I saw militarized police on full display over the weekend in St. Louis. This being a radio program, video is pretty meaningless, so I'm not gonna just sit here and watch it. I can tell you about it though. There's video that came out of St. Louis over the weekend. You know, I'll be glad when the goldenrod's not blooming anymore. It's got to be the goldenrod. Video came out of St. Louis over the weekend that showed a phalanx, and you know, if they'd had the 20-foot spears, it would have been straight up, just you know, boom, $2,400 year trip in time back to, you know, the days of those long spears. They were called sarissas. And that's how phalanges, yeah, well, I mean, it would be phalanges, but that's how they moved, in lockstep until they met resistance and then gig them with the spears, giggity-gee. But that's what you saw in St. Louis. One elderly woman, and this was shot from above. I don't know if it was drone footage or helicopter footage or whatever. But it was shot from above. One lone woman standing as the cops advanced, and they just marched over her. First, they knocked her down, and there wasn't that many people near them in the first place. They could have stopped. They could have arrested her. They could have... No, they marched over her. They stepped on her. And then, you know, one of the rear guard cops came along and cuffed her with her arms behind her back after, you know, she'd been walked on a little bit. That'll teach her to exercise her First Amendment rights, by God. But it's Antifa. Antifa. I don't even like the word. It just sounds kind of goofy, really. Say what it is. It's the anti-fascists who are the problem in the fevered dreams of Megan McArdle. And then comes this paragraph. I'm not going to read the whole damn thing. Don't worry. But then comes this paragraph. I don't have an ironclad date for when Antifa became a recognizable and destructive force in our politics. No, she doesn't have an ironclad date. Hell, she doesn't even, she can't even point to that as being a goddamn fact anywhere but inside her own fevered imagination. But I really began to notice them around the time of Trump's election. Goddamn. Does anybody remember the WTO little get-together in Seattle in the early 90s? Wasn't that Antifa out there, you know, the Black Bloc anarchists? Who, you know, they're not the same thing, but there's some Venn diagram overlap. Who were, you know, throwing rocks through windows and shit like that, which I don't agree with. But to the extent that Antifa actually has someone to oppose now, and that they have actually protected people against fascists, anti meaning, you know, opposed to or against, well, you're gonna have a hard time getting me to say that they served no good purpose in Charlottesville when the police ran away. Not because of Antifa, but because, as the police themselves said, the Nazis and the Klansmen have better guns than us. I mean, it's not like the police had to show up with no firearms whatsoever. They were gunned up. But the Nazis were there in Charlottesville with semi-automatic assault rifles. Rifles. And could easily have, well, made life a little bit difficult for the police. I mean, they were wearing tactical gear, and the cops were wearing tactical gear, and the cops had helmets, and they had helmets. I mean, it was almost a fair fight. So the cops ran away. Antifa doesn't show up in goddamn Kevlar vests. Antifa shows up in torn blue jeans and a black T-shirt and a black toboggan in hot weather. Yeah. So Megan McArdle doesn't know when Antifa became dangerous. She just knows that when she thinks about them, she can barely stand to choke down her Chardonnay. I mean, the privilege shining off of this woman is visible from space. And I'm about to prove that. I really began to notice them around the time of Trump's election when I saw people defending their actions on the grounds that they were trying to stop Trump from being normalized. Well, that remains a problem. He should not be normalized because he is not normal. And guess what? I saw over the weekend some polling data from somewhere indicating that a majority of Americans now support war against North Korea. That would tend to be proof that, to a certain extent, one idea or another of Trump's has been normalized. Yeah, going to war with somebody else who has nuclear weapons. That's normalizing. Yeah, I think so too. And then there's that other thing that happened over the weekend when Trump, as is his, comrade kumquat, as is his wont, decided to retweet, because somebody let him have his phone again, decided to retweet a known anti-Semitic Twitter personality, another right-wing turd, who, of course, is no threat whatsoever to Megan McArdle, and so she doesn't give her the fantods or the vapors or anything. There was this video of Trump in all his jiggling, pendulous, adipose glory, hitting a golf ball. And then the video cuts to show a golf ball hitting a woman getting aboard a plane who is clearly intended to be a representation of Hillary Clinton, hitting her in the back with said golf ball and knocking her on her face. This is still not enough to get Donald Trump banned from Twitter. Because, frankly, Twitter, it doesn't give a good goddamn about standards. And they'll put up with anything. Well, they'll put up with anything, as Carol Baker found out. They'll put up with anything except saying something that isn't even vulgar. Just saying something unkind about, you know, the Tangerine Tiberius. And as Carol points out, that old woman in St. Louis that got trampled by the cops was armed with her purse, violently armed with a purse, a white purse. Mm-hmm. All right, Carol also notes in regard to something I said a little bit ago, how long are we supposed to sit around and let them poke us? Until they decide to mow us down with cars, and then we're still supposed to let them poke us. Silently. Yeah. Because everything is the fault of the left. Oh, my God, the left, the left. What left? Oh, come on. If every member of Antifa had read 10 words of it, I don't think you could come up with an entire collection of enough people who had actually read among Antifa the goddamn Communist Manifesto. Okay? Just as an example. The left! Oh! You know, and I'm just treating it as a given that Godwin's law is dead. So I'll say, you know, every time a Megan McArdle says, Antifa! Oh, the left! All I hear is, Das ist die Arbeit von Kommunisten. And boom! Enabling Act. There's not even any more phony left. Everybody's just a bunch of happy little fascists. Right? But here it is. I saw people defending their actions on the grounds that they were trying to stop Trump from being normalized. It was argued, hint, Megan, the passive voice is never your best choice when you're trying to write persuasively. The passive voice does not convey conviction or strength. It was argued by whom, Megan? Whom? Can we get a little asterisk? Maybe a footnote or an endnote? Who? Who's arguing that? No linky there. It was argued that protesting as usual, show up, mill around for a while, chant a bit, and then go home to see how much news coverage you got, was inadequate to our uniquely dangerous historical moment. Stronger action was called for. Well, what a load of dismissive, privileged, elitist horseshit that is. Now, she's not talking about Antifa there. She's talking about anybody who protests. Any topic. Let's see if we can, you know, when I read some a smarmy load of horse shit like that, the first thing that comes to mind for me is Rosa Parks. Rosa Parks, who had been trained in nonviolent civil disobedience up at the Highlander School in Tennessee. Everybody tends to forget that. Dr. King had schooled up there as well. Among people who were, whose origins lay in real leftward labor organizing. And they took their tactics into the civil rights struggle. So when Rosa Parks didn't move, it wasn't because her feet were probably sore and her legs were tired and her back ached and all of that, But it wasn't because of that. It was because she had planned an act of civil disobedience. And, of course, Rosa Parks did not then, she didn't show up at the bus stop, mill around, chant a bit, and then go home to see how much news coverage she got. Jesus, jumping Christ. The people who marched across the Edmund Pettus Bridge into certain state-sponsored violence did not mill around for a while, chant a bit, and then go home to see how much news coverage they got. The people who protested the Vietnam War and put their very freedom on the line by burning their draft cards did not show up, mill around for a while, chant a bit, and then go home to see how much news coverage they got. The women who marched for equal rights, and going back a century or more, who marched for the right to fucking vote, did not show up, mill around for a while, chant a bit, and then go home to see how much news coverage they got. The people whose lives are threatened to this day out at Standing Rock did not show up, mill around for a while, chant a bit, and then go home to see how much news coverage they got. They sat through a freezing winter pursuing justice, petitioning the government for redress of grievance, which is guaranteed to them under the same First Amendment that protects Meghan McCardle's right to publish bilious bullshit like this. And you know what? Closer to home, Judy Bonds, trying to save her home, Judy Bonds did not show up, mill around for a while, chant a bit, and then go home to see how much news coverage she got. No, she engaged in a peaceful act of civil disobedience, and for her trouble was beaten in the head. And was too busy being arrested after having been beaten in the head to go home and find out how much news coverage she got. Apparently it's the news coverage that pisses Meghan McCardle off. She doesn't want people who are standing up for their rights to have news coverage. This is disgusting. You know, the misguided coal miners who took up arms despite what Mother Jones told them back in 1921 and marched on Blair Mountain. Well, they didn't show up, mill around for a while, chant a bit, and then go home to see how much news coverage they got. Instead, they got crushed like bugs. Some were charged with treason. Others went to jail. And then, if they could go back to work in the mines, they went back and they were subjected to even harsher conditions because the government was completely on the side of the mine operators. And they didn't get anything resembling justice until FDR and a Democratic Congress were elected in 1932 and were able to begin putting through the reforms that would result in the National Labor Relations Act that explicitly and specifically permitted the formation of labor unions. If you listen to Rick Smith's Labor History in Two, which is out there every day, you'll find an example almost every day of people who didn't show up, mill around for a while, chant a bit, and then go home to see how much news coverage they got. And if, in fact, that is what modern protest is, it is because that is what media have made modern protest. I mean, I've been at protests in D.C., and yeah, they're one and done. I've talked about it here on this program. It's been turned into a form of stylized performance art in some instances. And folks like the people at Standing Rock reminded us that no, this is not performance art. This is a goddamned existential struggle. But I've been at protests where I didn't have to show up, mill around for a bit, show up, mill around for a while, chant a bit, and then go home to see how much news coverage we got. I didn't have time for that. I was busy driving over getting people out of jail because they were arrested for expressing their First Amendment rights. They were arrested for engaging in the peaceful petition for redress of grievances. Because merely sitting down is enough to get the Capitol Police to come and haul your ass off. And that was during the Obama administration, for Christ's sakes. Now, God only knows what they do to you. U.S. Attorney General Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III has his way, it would be much worse than anything that is referred to now as catch and release, but which, in fact, you know, is more than that because it winds up costing a shit ton of money to express your First Amendment guaranteed right to petition the government for redress of grievances. I'm guessing precious libertarian Meghan McCardle has never, ever, 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 ever actually had to protest for anything in her miserable, cosseted, privileged, elitist existence. Because anyone who has would never write what she wrote. This isn't so much, it's not so much a critique of Antifa as it is a sort of vanilla, sweetened up defense of right-wing turds like Ben Shapiro and Milo Yiannopoulos, and neo-Nazis, and Klansmen, bigots, xenophobes, people who hate each other, hate other people for how other people love or dress or go pee-pee. She's an army ant. She'll go where she's told, do what she's told, and as long as it doesn't upset precious little Megan, all is well with the world and fuck anybody else who happens to have their world trampled on. She says, but the process of not normalizing Trump has instead normalized a lot of other things, bad ones, like public disorder, like persistent pervasive anxiety that often looks like mass hysteria, like people on both sides who try to minimize the illiberal tactics of the radicals on their own side by pointing mostly to the offenses of the other.
Horseshit.
I don't have any problem criticizing people when they put bricks through some poor shopkeeper's window. I don't have any problem doing that at all. And I don't approve of it. I argue against it. And no, don't go running around just looking for a fight because everybody's the man
keeping you down. But to take the soapbox that Bloomberg gave her and use it as a means of diminishing and minimizing people whose lives really are under assault, well, you know, fuck her. Metaphorically, of course. She's a pissant. And, well, that, you know, she's a libertarian, so. Yeah. But I love this line. It seems to be impossible, in fact, to write a column on Antifa without noting at length that they are not nearly as bad as the neo-Nazis who converged on Charlottesville, and indeed they are not. Well, thanks for the sour persimmons, sister. But how does that justify Antifa's tactics? It's not as... This was the part I loved. It's not as if the police are unable or unwilling to deal with white supremacists who commit violent acts. Bullshit! They ran at Charlottesville. Assholes and elbows. Remember, we talked about it. They ran. Armed to the teeth. And they ran. And who knows why they ran? Maybe the idea that they were afraid was just an excuse. Maybe they wanted to give the Nazis free range. Because, see, the thing is that Megan won't acknowledge, or maybe she just doesn't know about because, you know, privilege, is that the police, we know the police are infiltrated by Klan neo-Nazis, by Oath Keepers and Three Percenters. We don't suspect this. We know this. So, if you want to go read this over at Bloomberg View, knock yourself out. But, don't expect to be enlightened by it, because, of course, she's just a moron. Yeah, there you go. There you go, Carol Baker. Heather Heyer didn't get her ass run over and lose her life to go home and see what kind of coverage she got on the news. Nope, not at all. So, it's a start to the broadcast, that is. And maybe, you know, maybe the neo-Nazis can invite Megan McArdle to come and speak to them and tell them about how awful Antifa is. Because about the only people who could wholeheartedly agree with all of that are the white-wing, hyper-violent element of our society. And, you know, the idea that we're supposed to just trust the police, yeah, that's not going to go a long way, especially in certain communities. What was the word the judge in St. Louis used last Friday? Certain urban communities, urban meaning black, or people who know how the police have, oh yeah, I know, not all cops. Not all cops say to their partners in the middle of a chase, we're going to kill this motherfucker for sure, and then go and do it. Not all cops. But you know, enough of them that trusting them
is a real chore. Because while not all cops, it seems like when one of the not all cops gets busted, nothing happens. And they certainly do not pay a criminal penalty the way ordinary people pay criminal penalties who do the same sort of thing. You get my meaning. So, yeah, that's the first hour of Maury on Monday. And, of course, you're invited to engage in conversation if you'd like. I welcome it. I've got more Morans. Come on. You don't think I just show up with one Moran in the bag, do you? Of course not. And, you know, by the way, those young people, the ones at Kent State, yeah, they didn't show up, mill around, chant a bit, and go home to see what kind of coverage they got, because they were real busy being dead. But Megan McArdle can't remember that either. Because privilege. Because elitist. Because if it's not happening to Megan McArdle, one gets the idea that it's really not happening. Oh, well. So, like I said, jump in if you want to. And you know how to do that, I trust. From anywhere on the planet, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. And if you've got a Moran, bring it. But, you know, bring your Moran A game, okay? Whatever that means. And by the way, if you don't feel like you've got your A game this evening, may I suggest Climactic Kohlrabi from Horn Labs, a new nutritional supplement only from Horn Labs, a proprietary blend of only the finest organic, free-range, vegan, non-GMO, cruelty-free kohlrabi. Gently picked, dried in the sun, ground into a powder, and filled into vegan capsules so that you can meet your kohlrabi needs every day. Climactic Kohlrabi. It's the only way I can stand to eat kohlrabi on any, because I just hate the stuff otherwise. Oh, that's a good question. That's a good question. Asa asking, what about the St. Louis cop who smashed the restaurant window? Was he normalizing Antifa too? Look, not all cops smash windows, Asa. Okay, dude? Yeah. All right, break time. We started the program, and we've gone on for an hour and 8 minutes, and fundraising-wise, we are still at zero, so hopefully it won't stay that way. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn, and I'm Bob Kincaid. We'll be back.
Oh,
seemed like an appropriate way to put a sort of a cap on the first hour's proceedings. This is the Horn, Moran Monday, the 18th of September, 2017. And let us stand not upon our going, but go at once over to check in with Steve from Georgia Stan. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Bob. What's going on, man?
I'm here. You're there.
I just had somebody to throw into the Moran pile, and then I'll get out of here and let you move on to somebody
else.
Well,
don't get in a hurry. Don't get in a hurry. Sometimes we have to work through this stuff.
Oh, yeah. I've decided on a Generex, by the way. But they are so backed up that I can't get a representative out here till October.
Now, you're getting the humongous multi-thousands of dollars affair that runs the whole house, right?
Yeah, yes. And I'm going to get a big propane tank so I don't have to worry about constantly fueling it up and all that as well. So if you're going to go all out, you know?
Right. Absolutely.
It's just another car payment, so what the hell?
How much wiring are you going to be into to get it installed?
You know, I don't know, Bob. I'll have to look into that. When they come out and give me the assessment, I'm sure he'll break all that down.
Because you're going to have some way to keep it from back feeding onto the grid.
Yeah, that could be a problem. I don't think that the co-ops would like that. But
no, so, and it's actually dangerous for people who are, who work in the business who, you know, try to get power restored. So yeah, I mean you'll have to do that. So it's not just going to be the cost of the great big humongo unit. It's going to be the cost of the great big humongo unit plus whatever rewiring is involved.
Right, right. And I've got an electrician. He's a good guy. In fact, his name is Guy, and I'll probably go with him to do all the wiring. But I've thought this through, and I've decided that's the best way to go with global warming and everything. A Jenny is almost as essential as air conditioning. Because it's only going to get worse. Have you looked at the tropics lately?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's an... what's her name? Maria. Maria. I just met a storm named Maria. Fact, and, of course, West Side Story is set among, a Puerto Rican group in New York City. And, of course, Maria's bearing down on Puerto Rico. You know, goddamn musicals.
Can't make this stuff up, can you, Bob? And Jose and Maria make go into it's probably not going to happen, but there's this rare effect. There's a Japanese term where they actually orbit around each other, which would actually be a good thing for, well, not Puerto Rico, obviously. It's too late for them, but people on the East Coast, because they would pull them both out to sea. So, but
that'd be fine by me.
Yeah, too.
But
me too.
There's always the possibility that the thing gets sucked through the Straits of Florida, and runs up onto the Gulf Coast. I mean,
we've hit.
I mean, if you're just playing the odds, you know, we've hit Florida. Florida's been hit. The Texas Gulf Coast has been hit. So you know, from like New Orleans to Panama City is kind of open.
That's very possible. They really don't know. They do these projections 5 days out. They really don't have a grasp on it, in my opinion, until you're 2 or 3 days out. Then they kind of get more of a handle.
No, because it's out there a million miles away, and the cone just gets wider and wider and wider and wider.
And they're running all these spaghetti models, and the spaghetti models are all going in different directions.
Yeah, and I'm just pitiful. I look at it and I go, ooh, spaghetti models. Mmm, spaghetti.
Spaghetti, yeah. Where's the marinara? But let me get on to why I called. Last Tuesday, I didn't have any power, and I was forced to listen to WSB because they gave you the updates of what's going on. You know, you're from the area, and you know that's about the only big player in
WSB News on the 20s, weather on the 20s.
Exactly. And I was forced to listen to Flush Flimbaugh, and he actually said this, Bob, and I'm not making this up, and what's why we could throw this into the Moran Paul. He said, if the liberals are so interested, my friends, in harnessing wind power, look at all the energy that Irma is creating, that they're just wasting, frittering away. Why aren't they harnessing it? I thought, you son of a bitch.
What a fucking dumbass.
you hop in your Learjet, go to the West Side, and make a cruel statement like that, you know? Like, yeah, you're going to harness 100-mile-an-hour winds.
But speaking of cruel statements, and I don't want to take away from Flush, but from the department, you know, from because you know he keeps an eye on these things and makes sure that I'm aware of them. From the Spicoli files, namely,
you dick.
there's how about Hulk Hogan? Did you come across this one?
Does this have something to do with that?
Well, last Thursday he got on the Twitter. And remember, this is a guy who sued, you know, with the help of a right-wing libertarian troll, billionaire
TMZ,
troll. He sued a website. For publishing a sex tape that he actually provided to the guy from whom the website got it.
He was doing Bubba the Love Sponge's wife with
and
permission.
Just, yeah, right, right. So, you know. You know. I'll be back in a minute.
Take your vitamins.
Yeah, I don't think even climactic kohlrabi can help me with this. No, he got on Twitter. He lives in Clearwater, Florida. And his real name's not Hulk Hogan.
It's Terry something, isn't it?
Terry Jean Bollea, Bollea.
Yep. Yep.
But he's got one of those little blue checkmark Twitter accounts. He's got the little blue bird by him, or check mark, or whatever. And this past Thursday, he said, "No water, no power, crybabies, everyone's complaining, these people have no clue how bad it could be, praying for those that got hit hard, lost." So if you don't, you know, so like, you know, the elderly people who died in the nursing home, according to Hulk Hogan, they had no power and they were, and so they were crybabies. If you don't have water in Florida, if you don't have power in Florida, you're a crybaby, according to Hulk Hogan.
What an asshole.
No.
You dick.
And I don't want to get theological or anything, but just reaffirms my lack of faith of there being any sky spook up there that can direct things.
No, because the lightning bolts, the right wingers and the maggots and are so busy right now, running their filthy little gobs and saying shitty things. If there really was, you wouldn't be able to move in Florida right now for the lightning bolts.
And what kind of entity would let the people down in the Caribbean get hit twice within a week by something? You know, that's cruel.
Well, you need to ask Pat Robertson about that, because you might recall a few years ago after the earthquake in Haiti.
Oh yeah, I remember, because they worshiped the devil.
Yeah, they made a pact with the devil, so they deserve to have an earthquake that killed poor people.
It's discouraging, Bob.
Christians.
Hey, we were indoctrinated in it. We've seen it from the inside out, so we know how sleazy it is, you know.
Yeah, but we also walked away.
Yeah.
Because sooner or later, you just can't. You can't.
You can't, right. Any reasonably thinking, intelligent person with their eyes open.
But I want to make sure that I understand this. Limbaugh actually said that the liberals need to capture hurricane energy?
Yeah, oh yes, if we're so interested in wind power, and that's right up there at the top of our agenda, why haven't we come up with the technology of harvesting hurricanes? Think of all the energy this disperses, my friends. He said that. And if there's any
I'll bet he was one of those fuckers up on his roof with a fan trying to blow the hurricane away.
No, he was out on the West Coast. He skedaddled after he called it fake news. He was broadcasted from the west side.
He scampered off.
Yeah.
Well,
anyway.
No, to be clear, just to be fair, I don't, and I want to be fair. I don't think Rush Limbaugh is capable of scampering.
There's any way you can not that you would want to, but capture Tuesday's show. You'll hear it for yourself.
Most he can do is trundle.
And I can't believe there's bobbleheads actually out there nodding up and down saying, yeah, Rush, yeah, why aren't they doing this?
Magadettos from Busted Knuckle, Rush. Them goddamn libtards can't even capture wind energy.
It just blew me away. I'm sitting here with no lights in the dark, you know, hot, and having to hear this asshole come
you know what a wind turbine does in 150-mile-an-hour winds, don't you?
It'd probably spin off its axis, wouldn't it?
No, it just keeps making energy. Those things, I mean, they're like the ones that they design for placement out to sea, like places like, oh, the North Sea.
Mm-hmm.
Those things are rated to live through hurricane events and storm events and nor'easters. So they just turn some more.
Would it spin faster? You're saying it would create the same amount of energy at a 100 miles an hour.
They just go on doing what they were doing.
Yeah, so it wouldn't matter because there's probably governors on them. And I'm being crude, that limits, you know, their output. And I don't know. I'm just spitballing. But is that what you're saying? Or?
Yeah.
Yeah. Jesus. Well, let me get out of here, Bob. I'm sure you got other people.
All right, run away. I understand.
No, I just want to be courteous. I know you got a lot of people you need to get to. But I wanted to throw Flush Flimbaugh in the Moran group because he certainly deserves to be there after that asinine statement.
Well, I'm glad you did because, you know, it's like the Bible says, in my Father's house are many Morans.
Yep, and I don't want to hear about Job or any of that shit either. You know, I'm tired. I'm done with all of that.
No, screw that.
Yeah. I'll talk at you later, Bob.
All right, take care, Steve. Bye now.
All right, thanks, man. Bye.
All around great guy and midweek utility pinch hit chat room moderator Steve from Georgia Stan. I'm glad he's going to go with the generator, or I'm glad he's going to get a generator, because the best way to make sure you don't lose power anymore is to own one. It's a goddess of irony thing, but it's really there. More in Monday, and if you, the lines are open, if you want to, 304-574-8178 or Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, either way, it's fine by me. I wanted to recommend an article to you. I read it earlier. I got it via email. It is a really, really good piece of writing by Rembert Brown over at Bleacher Report. The title of it is Colin Kaepernick Has a Job. I got a note over the weekend from Essie, who corrected my poor pronunciation. Esselin, from last week. Longtime listener, love your show. I clean buildings in the evening. I can't call in when you're on, but maybe that's for the best. I got a chance to kick in $10 the other day. First payday in a long time I've ever been able to do that. Don't want you to go off the air. I don't want to go off the air, and we try month to month. This, referring to the article, this is an amazing article, well written, and articulates the thoughts of many black people in America quite well. It's the whole, if we ignore it, then it will go away and or it isn't real attitude many well-meaning white folks have about racism that is killing us. It's why I hate it when white folks say, I don't care what color you are, or I don't see color. Of course you don't. And parenthetically, not you personally, Bob. You should. It's how you process that information that counts. If seeing that I'm black stops you from being a racist, then good for that. If that's the heads up that you need, the warning sign on the road that lets you know you may be about to speak to someone who doesn't see the world as blissfully ignorant of pain and struggle as you do, then by all means, use it. Process it. Learn to word your thoughts and manipulate your actions accordingly. Thanks for a powerful show. You and Mike Malloy are awesome.
Thanks for correcting my opinion of white Southerners. I misconstrued you by your accent, but since then, you've corrected my dumb assumptions and schooled my narrow-minded ass. LOL. Anyway, use the article if you can. It's really good. My shift starts at 5 p.m. MST, so if you do use it, I'll hear it around then. I hope to kick in next month, maybe even become a subscriber if I can get my money right. Thanks for being and breathing. That's a cool line. And to whomever Gina was or is, what a beautiful way to end your show. I always, always love to hear that close. Esalen. Pronounced Esalen. Or Essie. Thanks, Essie. Someday I'll have to tell the Gina story again. People, you know, come and go from the community, and they don't necessarily know why that line is there. And or maybe I need to put up something on the Horn website just to explain it. The short version is the Horn is a living memorial to Gina, a remarkable and amazing woman who was Boss Man Wayne's wife and who died before we were ever able to get back on the air in our current incarnation. But the creation of the Horn is, Boss Man Wayne wanted to make it a living memorial to her of progressive broadcasting. So that's the short version. And again, Colin Kaepernick has a job is the article over at Bleacher Report. It's not that I don't want to feature it on Moran Monday. It's not a Moran story. But moreover, it's beautifully written, and it is artistically written, and it is an article for reading, not necessarily an article for reporting on. Whereas the string of letters that Megan McArdle typed together in the first hour, that's an opinion piece for reporting on because of the amount of privilege stupid that's contained inside it. The Bleacher Report piece is not that. So go maybe run over to Bleacher Report and spend a few minutes quite well and read Colin Kaepernick has a job. I was so pleased today when I heard that Tom Brady had announced that Colin Kaepernick deserves an opportunity to play in the NFL. Can you hear the sarcasm? You know, Tom Brady, the guy in the MAGA hat. Yeah, that Tom Brady. What else? Well, note coming in from James. Going back to Nazis marching with guns, a subtle reminder, this is how we got gun control in California and then the nation. And it is, of course, that iconic photograph of the Black Panthers standing on the California State House steps that was so terrifying to white people that poor Nancy Reagan about soiled herself running to Ronnie to demand that he do something about those Negroes with all those guns. And I think there's truth to James's assertion. We got that. Morans, and near any drop to dream. You know what I mean. Okay, so this is just a weird little story. But it sort of doubles back onto the whole Equifax thing I was talking about. I thought about turning this into a written piece, but I prefer, and maybe this is sort of paleo of me. I'm trained to write, and I write fairly well. And I don't mind writing. But when I say maybe this is kind of paleo, I prefer speaking. From the time that I was little and I first heard the stories about how, you know, the Iliad and the Odyssey, which those stories just captivated me as a kid. Bold Achilles.
Ajax, Hector, brave Hector. Brave, brutalized Hector. The stories are engaging, but it became even more so for me when I was little. When I learned that they didn't start out as written creations. They started out as oral traditions. And as a child, I was already growing up in a home where... I grew up in a home. I was already growing up in a home where oral traditions were fully on display, where stories were told about old aunt or old uncle or your great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather. I've remarked in the past that in Appalachia, at least, I don't know about other places, other cultures, in Appalachia, your ancestors are presences that you're told about. I rejuvenated some of it to a certain extent. I was telling Ferg the other day that the reason, because Frosty brand root beer has reappeared on our shelves. And I explained to Ferg that when I was a little kid, we'd come up here and my grandfather always had Frosty brand root beer. And he only lived till I was like five, but even after that, Granny always had Frosty root beer. And the reason for that was because it tasted closer to the root beer that my great-grandfather made than any of the other store-bought root beer did. Or that was what was said. And so that was a departure point for me to tell Ferg again what his great-great-grandfather, whom I never met, was like. Worked his ass off in the mines, lived in coal company housing, but he used that little yard of his, and it wasn't much yard at all, to raise a garden, and he built a little smokehouse, and he'd raise a hog every year and butcher the hog in the fall, and then he'd smoke his own make and smoke his own bacon, his own hams, his own pork loins, what have you. They used everything but the squeal. And so, you know, this kind of passing down of oral tradition. They say our brains rearrange themselves somewhat evolutionarily after the advent of writing, which is something that the sons of Noah began doing as soon as the floodwaters receded. No. Writing, of course, arose, to the best of our knowledge, in the land between the rivers. It begins with cuneiform. Other cultures begin doing something similar fairly shortly thereafter. It arises in a completely separate context on the island of Crete, where recently they found footprints that are actually older than what we thought were the oldest hominin footprints in existence, throwing the paleoanthropology of humanity into a little bit of chaos if it withstands the academic scrutiny. Writing arose in a different form in Mesoamerica and in Egypt and in Asia. And because people began writing things, the portion of the brain that was used for remembering vast amounts of information in an orderly fashion gradually diminished and was replaced by a different kind of information processing, that which was manifested in writing. Or so the theory goes. Where in God's name are you going with this, Bob? I don't know. No, I do know. And so that idea what I do here for 3 hours every night is a manifestation of that.
the idea of, no, I'm no Homer. Fortunately, I have my sight, for starters. And I don't look good at all in a toga or a chiton or anything like that. Can't play a harp worth a lick. But I do what I do here better, I think, than... It's a different experience than just writing it down. And so over the weekend, we were... it started out, Saturday night. Agnes's favorite actor is probably Katharine Hepburn. She particularly loves her in as Eleanor of Aquitaine in The Lion in Winter. Because as women's roles go, that is one of the, especially for the time period, that is one of the better and strongest roles out there. Because there is nothing weak, there is nothing retiring about the way that Eleanor of Aquitaine is written. So we were watching an interview with Katharine Hepburn, and I said, well, then we started talking about her career and everything. And I said, have you ever seen Desk Set? Because I wanted to show Agnes a Katharine Hepburn film that did not involve her being necessarily ferocious, but involved her being smart and witty and downright funny. And of course, she co-stars with Spencer Tracy, with whom she had a long-standing relationship in that film. But then as we watched, I began to realize that maybe something in the back of my mind was making a different kind of connection. Because the plot of that film centers on the research department of a broadcasting conglomerate that just happens to be housed in what is very obviously shown to be Rockefeller Center in New York City. And it is called, for purposes of the film, the Federal Broadcasting Company. It's NBC. And Katharine Hepburn's character is the head of the reference department, and she manages the reference library where everybody, all the broadcast operations, all the news programs, the game shows, quiz shows, what have you, reach out to the reference desk for verification of facts. And along comes Spencer Tracy with a great big computer, which they are all convinced is going to replace them. It's called Emmerak. Interestingly, at the beginning of the film, they acknowledge, the filmmakers acknowledge the help that they had from what is referred to on the screen as the International Business Machines Corporation, IBM. Now, IBM has an artificial intelligence application that they constantly tout in ads now, and the name of that application is Watson. And I would surmise that most of the people who see that and can even make the connection, and you know, this is the kind of group you can think of would make that connection. Think, oh well, you know, Watson, you know, the assistant to Sherlock Holmes. Ah, but wait, it's from IBM. IBM was accredited
collaborator with that film, Desk Set, in which the Katharine Hepburn character's name was, that's right, Watson. And so you see, it's a 1950 film, so there's a lot wrong with it. The reference library is, of course, staffed entirely by women, and apparently every single human being inside Rockefeller Center there is white, 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 white. There aren't even different shades of white, okay? Everybody's just real white. But inside it is an encapsulation of the goddamned Equifax problem and data security and the role of computers in our life. Emmerak is, of course, this great big humongous bank of stuff. And there are, of course, 15-inch reels of magnetic tape that... There's another little gem in there that when Emmerak is doing something, it goes... beep, beep, beep. And I heard that, and I immediately heard the beep, 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 that would come along, 25, 27 years later in Close Encounters of the Third Kind. And, of course, the dynamic tension is that the Katharine Hepburn character... And by the way, all the women in the film appear every day at work in what is goddamn well couture clothing. And we all know that broadcast networks don't pay that kind of money. But it was probably costumes by Edith Head, so it was all gorgeous. You know, the blonde woman who shows up to work in a purple satin, you know, never mind. But the Katharine Hepburn character is almost, she almost resembles, although she's much more functional and witty, she resembles Rain Man more than anybody else. She's just this cross-referencing mind that, you know, that turns numbers backwards and associates things that ought not be associated. And there's a beautiful little scene on the roof of the building in the cold with Spencer Tracy and her where the energy is just wonderful, where she proves her analytical skills, you know, because she has to, because, you know, she's a woman, he's a man, and he's the computer genius from MIT and blah, blah, blah. And it's quaint to see the way that in 1950 people thought, or, you know, Hollywood storytellers thought, computers would engage with us and we with them. As Devin points out, IBM's punch cards kept the cattle cars on time and the ovens occupied night and day. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And the Bush family was there doing business through, what was it, Brown Brothers Harriman? Oh, yeah. But it's all about how a computer, and this popped into my mind, too, because I do bizarre associations as well. It's all about how they perceive that the computer is going to replace humans. And I was reminded of that commandment that you'll run across in Dune. Did you ever notice that in Dune, the commandment from the Orange Catholic Bible? Thou shalt not make a machine in the image of a human mind.
That's why mentats are there, and that's why the spice and the juice of the what's its berry and people are turned into human computers, because in the distant past of the Dune universe, there had been horrible warfare that was started by computers, which is also manifested, say, in the Terminator series with Skynet, or in Matrix. We have an innate fear of the power that computers can have. And in some ways, it's coming true. Because again, there's nobody at Equifax or Experian or TransUnion who says, "Well, no, I'm sorry, Mr. Smith. You were 2.5 minutes late with your power bill payment last week. We deducted 352 points from your credit score for that because you goddamn deserve it and you can't do a damn thing about it." There's no human doing that. That's strictly the computer and the probably Sherman Act violating restraint of trade that goes on in between those three major companies. And who knows who has that data now? Your data, your birthday, your address, your social security number, hell, your phone number, your email address. Because they just suck it all up and collect it. If somebody you do business with of a financial, nature has that data, for some reason or another, they turn it over to Equifax, TransUnion, and Experian. And you are powerless about it. And so, I want to come back to that issue on Moran Monday, because because that really is the dark side of the future of our interaction with computers. Which may sound a little bit hypocritical of me as I sit here speaking, because there's no tower outside the fabulous Horn Mansion here going beep 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 beep, beep, sending out a signal. This is all going across the internet. And the idea of a network, that was completely foreign in Desk Set. There was an MRAC in payroll, and there was an MRAC in the research department. And they didn't talk to each other. It's the interconnectedness. And it's things that we've been warned about in the past. But, out of sight, out of mind. We're on the verge of possibly being, and won't we just be the chumps if they do, the Graham-Cassidy bill that was introduced in the Senate, which is an even worse version of a healthcare fuckover than skinny repeal was. Because this one gets serious. This one hammers the blue states, where people are able to access health care, or not all blue, the states where the Medicaid expansion was taken. This hammers those states. This murders Medicaid, among other things that it does. And, because we're all sort of busy looking at it, we're watching to see if, we tune into the Weather Channel to see if a sideways spinning stop sign is finally going to decapitate one of their reporters. And we watch the stories of heroic rescues, and then we watch the parachute journalist stories. And tell me, ma'am, how miserable is your life right now? Well, it's pretty miserable. How miserable? Well, we ain't got a house. That's terrible. Back to you in the studio, Skip. Let's go down to Port Arthur and see if we can find some more miserable people. After that, we'll go and see if we can talk to some of those folks that Hulk Hogan calls crybabies who don't have electricity in a nursing home somewhere. Oh, sorry, we won't be going to the nursing home. They're dead! And so we've been all tied up in that. We're watching North Korea. Not so much because, at least I don't think that North Korea is going to attack us, but because I don't trust Dolt 45 not to attack them. And then China, and then there goes the neighborhood. And while we're doing all of those things, the Republicans in the Senate and the House are going, ha, 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 no calls this time, by God. Yeah, everybody's all busy with the hurricanes and North Korea and shit. Let's fuck them good. Yeah, come on, Bubba. Yeah, come on over here, Cletus. Yeah, oh, yeah, give it. Mm-hmm. Screw them. You squeal like a pig. Shorty got a pretty face. And, of course, Experian and Equifax and TransUnion have ruined countless lives because of medical debt, because that gets turned into them, too. And you're severely limited in what you can take care of in bankruptcy after the Bankruptcy Reform Act of 2004. Wasn't it 2004? I think it was 2004. And meanwhile, the most we can get is a legislator who is deemed to be a liberal who will say that we ought to force the credit reporting agencies to allow people to freeze their credit for free. How about, and I'm gonna go back to this until I get a good reason not to do it. How about we eliminate the sons of bitches? Am I supposed to understand that this country could not extend credit, that banks couldn't extend credit, that that people with money couldn't engage in lending activities, that there was no credit-based activity before the era of Equifax and TransUnion and Experian? Because I know that to be not true. I know that there was a time in this country when a person was gauged, and it's also a racist time in this country, okay? Because, well, there's never really been a time in this country that wasn't racist, now has there? But there was a time in this country when going to the bank for a loan or whatever, going down to the Bailey Savings and Bailey Building and Loan was a matter of, do you know George Bailey? Does George Bailey know you? Well, he knows that you might have a hard time, but he knows you'll pay the money back, right? Right. It's a little oversimplified, but that time did exist. You know, if Equifax and TransUnion and Experian want to exist for the purpose of analyzing the credit worthiness of corporate transactions and bank transactions with other corporations, fine, let them. I don't care. But this really is one of those moments where I go back to that quote from Dune, "Thou shalt not create a machine in the image of a human mind." Because Equifax and TransUnion and Experian don't give a good tinker's damn whether or not you can borrow money to put a roof on your house and keep from freezing to goddamn death in the winter. Their computers don't give a shit. And the fact of the matter is the existence of those credit reporting agencies is nothing short of a long-term assault on any idea of notion, any concept of community that this country has ever had. You know, you can be, and the other, the other side of that coin is that you can be a total rounder and bounder, but by God, if you've got a 672 credit score, they're knocking down your doors. 700, whatever. Oh, yeah, can we give you another credit card, Mr. Jones? And you can be a total fraud. As long as you're a fraud who, you know, pays on time. And doesn't apply for credit too many places because, you know, you apply, you know, it comes down. And then, you know, you can have enough credit, and then too much credit, and then things begin to slip. Right. And then one day somebody winds up with cancer, and all of that hard work goes right down the toilet when you can't pay because you don't have any goddamn health insurance. See how it all sort of wraps together? Or maybe it only wraps together in my mind. Ron and Raleigh with a note. I'm surprised that you didn't mention the ultimate computer fear movie, Colossus: The Forbin Project. Well, this was triggered more by just some weekend relaxation time watching a cute and clever movie from 1950 that's kind of quaint because you can see both the accurate and the more misguided aspects of. Yeah, but anyway. Robert in Australia asks, has anyone done the HAL joke yet? Yeah, HAL from 2001 A Space Odyssey. H comes before I. A comes before B. L comes before M. HAL in 2001 is actually IBM. Robert says, I worked on mainframe computers from 1977 to 1999. By 1977, the flashing lights had almost gone. I used to suggest to the IBM engineers that they should sell a big box that's nothing but flashing lights to go with their mainframes, put it in the middle of the room to impress the board of directors when they come through. I remember seeing desks set in black and white on TV as a kid. I only recall the silly bit at the end where the two leads asked the computer if they should marry or some such. Well, now you've ruined it, Robert! No, you haven't. I'm kidding. As for Equifax, I found out they bought an Australian company late last year that does the same thing here. Locally, they put out the statement, but I don't think Australian customers will be affected. Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah, right. Okay, so I've filibobstered... I've filibobstered away an hour. But I just wanted to tell you that little story because, again, sometimes it's about storytelling, not committing things to writing. I think there's some little core of me that's got a sort of pre-literate hunter-gatherer bias. And thus, I talk into the microphone instead of pecking away at a keyboard. The only problem is, it's far less permanent. But then again, how permanent is stuff that we commit to little electronic pulses? Right? Yeah. Okay, so 2 hours into the program, and our over-the-weekend subscribers are not getting any help. I'm sorry to say it, but they are not. We were going to try to raise $200 or whatever we could raise on any given evening this evening. And so far, bupkis. Oh, well, we'll do our best. So let's run over and check in with Scott. Hey, Scott.
Hello, Bob.
How are you?
Pretty good. It's funny you should mention desk set.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of hard to say, isn't it, desk set?
Yeah. I was browsing around on Netflix just last night, and I noticed that it's available on Netflix again. And it's been a while since I've seen it, so I'll have to add it to my list.
Well, it's cute. And to the extent, you know, that everybody's, you know, desk set so white, it's a little like The Breakfast Club. You know, that was kind of a groundbreaking film back in the early 80s when it came out. Or mid-80s, whatever. And you watch it. I watched it again not too long back because it was on something on DirecTV now. And I went, damn, this movie's white.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe there's hope. I mean, maybe if I'm noticing, it, you know, a guy who burns under the refrigerator light bulb like me is noticing it. Maybe there's a broader reason to think that we're becoming a little more diversity conscious.
Well, if the Emmy awards program last night was any indication, there's way more diversity than there's ever been. So that's good, at least in television.
Yeah.
But anyway, you were mentioning banking on a first name basis.
Right.
One of the first bank accounts I had, checking accounts, was in Alexandria, Virginia, my little old hometown. It was one of the oldest banks in the state, called Burke and Herbert is the name of the bank, and they're still around. But the guy who ran it was like the grandson or the son of one of the founders, and he kept a parrot in his office. And there was always some talk.
A pattern emerges.
No, there was the story around town was that the bird was in on the process of approving or disapproving loan applications. But I was never able to verify that. Forget the bird's name. But the branch that I dealt with was right at the main intersection in Alexandria, at least back in the olden days. And I would walk in and they knew you by name. You didn't go by you had an account number, but it was not mandatory that you present it along with three official forms of ID to transact any business.
And swear that you've never had anything to do with ISIS or Al-Qaeda, right?
And if you were short, let's say you needed to write a $20 check, but you only had like $16 in your account, and you were a couple of days away from payday, you could write a check for 20 bucks, and they'd shove the 20 under the thing, and you were good to go, because they knew that when you came and deposited your check, they would just, a couple of days later, they would just even everything out. It was...
They knew where to find you.
Well, yeah, but I miss banking of that type.
It's kind of tough for a generation that was raised on the notion of Jed going down to the Commerce Bank of Beverly Hills and Miss Jane asking Mr. Clampett, do you have what you call your walking around money? And yeah. because Mr. Drysdale had fainted because he'd lost a nickel and had to have a couple of thousand dollars waved under his nose like smelling salts.
Yeah.
but I mean, look, there's an upside and a downside. Banking and wild-eyed, conscienceless investing bought us the Great Depression in many ways.
Yeah.
Of course I can trust you. Yeah. You want to buy a million shares of IBM on margin, Fred? Sure thing. You've got to have regulation.
Well, and when they're toward the culmination, you know, of the run-up of the stock market, the wild speculation. If you're getting investment tips, stock tips, from shoeshine guys and barbers and bartenders, that's the time to realize that, to do what old Joe Kennedy did and get the hell out while the getting was good, you know? Because, you know, there's a certain, even today, there's a certain sophistication in dealing with stocks and bonds and things. And when you start getting tips from your shoeshine guy or your bartender or your barber, that's telling of that. That's an indication.
And you remind me of something. Another one of those little books that that comes across as one thing but winds up being something else entirely. And I mentioned this in the past. He's known as a regional author of the late 19th and early 20th century. In Appalachia, a guy by the name of John Fox Jr., Harvard educated, but came from the border region of the Bluegrass and the Appalachians in Kentucky, writes a romance called The Trail of the Lonesome Pine, which comes across as
And you know, it's 1906 or something. Bank panics and bank failures were nothing new to the United States. In fact, they were more regular than Halley's Comet. Because every now and then the banks would get all froggy, and then everything would go south.
Yeah.
But in the early 1900s, he writes a book called Trail the Lonesome Pine that centers on what today would be deemed a shockingly inappropriate romance between a full-grown man and a pubescent girl, a little hillbilly girl. But along the way contains some pretty trenchant observations of boomtown economies. And I don't care if the boomtown is in a gold field, a coal field, or on Wall Street, boom economies are unstable things that are bound to go bust. And so when you said, you know, when you're getting stock tips from your shoeshine guy, and that's, you know, that's a story that comes out, that arises out of the roaring 20s. You know, everybody was an investor. Everybody was an overnight millionaire. We saw some of that repeated in what was called the tech bubble of the 90s. The same thing happens in that book, because suddenly the barber is a real estate magnate, because the whole area is going to just boom with the discovery of this and the exploitation of that and the building of the other. And then, of course, it all just dies, and the little town is left to sink back into obscurity.
So, what's the name of the book again? Because that rings a faint bell, and I may have read that years and years ago.
It's called The Trail of the Lonesome Pine. I think it was actually the first movie released in Technicolor.
Hmm. Okay. And I'll look for that.
And it was Fred McMurray was in it, in the movie version. As compared to the book, it's terrible, but it enjoys the distinction of being the first Technicolor film, and also the kid who, in The Little Rascals, the kid who played Cubby, you know who I'm talking about, right?
I don't remember a Cubby in The Little Rascals. I remember a Cubby in the Mickey Mouse Club.
Okay, no, it wasn't Cubby. It was Spanky. Sorry,
oh,
thank you.
George McFarlane.
Well, okay, I'll take your word for it.
Yeah.
He gets a role in this film, and, you know, not worried about ruining it for anybody. And he gets killed. And it's one of those things that in the age of the internet, you'll find it, you'll find over at IMDb or whatever in the notes section on, you know, failures of continuity and things like that. Well, he's laying there dead, and he's like, fingers are wiggling. But. But the book itself, I think it's actually out there as
probably public domain.
I think it is, and I think you can get it on most formats.
Yeah, you mentioned, speaking of books, when you were talking about the dot-com bubble, it reminded me of a book that I read back when I was doing insurance investment products and mutual funds back in the 80s. Extraordinary Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds. And it goes back all the way to the tulip craze in Holland. And Lord knows when that was. But and human nature being what it is, this is why those bubbles are cyclical, because it's like as they try to kill Social Security in this day and age, it's only because a fair number of people who are old enough to remember when Social Security was brand new, that generation has pretty much died off, so that the schemers can really be up to something nefarious. Because there's nobody to challenge them. Because the people who would know the madness of that approach, are that generation's pretty much gone. But I did have a question about this new edition of Trump Care, and I figured you would probably know, which is why I want to bring it up. when they were talking about it on TV today, they said that if they vote on it by September 30th, a simple majority will suffice. If it's after September 30th, they need, what is it, two-thirds. What's the significance of September 30th versus...
Well, September 30th is the end of the federal fiscal.
Yeah, but what would that have... How would that have any...
The budget reconciliation rule.
Ah, okay. All right, I didn't even think about that. Well, we're talking numbers, so we woke Punky up.
By the way, little cowbell for Brother Deacon Asa, who says, I'm not surprised at all that the bird was involved in the decision-making at Scott's Bank. Those parakeets are smarter than the bankers themselves.
Well, this was a parrot, big-ass parrot. I forget his name. Actually, if you Google...
The mouse is a ventriloquist. He's doing it all.
Pardon me. If you Google Burke and Herbert Bank, you can probably find a couple of old newspaper articles from 40 or 50 years ago, and they mention the parrot's name, and I think there may even be a picture of him.
You know, you can't do that to me on air, Scott. That's just not nice. So is it Burke with an E or no E?
B-U-R-K-E and Herbert, as in, well, my granddaddy's name was Herbert.
Abbott, yes. Listen.
Herbert Aloysius Cady. How's that for a name?
there it is. Apparently the parrot, you know, and parrots can live a very long time. The parrot has long since gone pining for the fjord. But as of 11/16/2015, the official mascot of Burke and Herbert is apparently a parrot. Runyon, the mascot of Burke and Herbert Bank.
Yeah, there you go, Runyon. But the gentleman, the owner of the parrot, Taylor Burke, had a big old walrus-type mustache. Do you remember those?
Oh, absolutely.
And a nice big desk at the main office. And you could walk in off the street, and he would size people up pretty accurately. Without a lot of paperwork. I mean, there was some paperwork, but generally it was like a handshake deal. And if you didn't raise any alarms in his radar, so to speak, you pretty much got the loan.
Now, of course, for the time and the era, the things that would raise alarms and make blips on radar would be things like being female or being a color darker than a white paper bag, it is, after all, old Virginia. The regulations that we have are good regulations, and you know, the whole idea of bank examiners and things like that is to keep bank panics from happening again.
Yeah, and that's so, one of the reasons.
So I acknowledge that, but I challenge the idea. That can't happen without also letting hyena data companies feast on our bits and our bytes.
Well, and this thing with Equifax, and what brings it to mind is having watched that Frontline documentary from 2004, The Secret History of the Credit Card. And it's not just about the credit card. They talk about the credit reporting agencies and how if you're late with your electric bill by 12 minutes, it dings your credit. I never signed up for anything like that with either the electric company or with the credit reporting agency. What justification do they have other than, well,
because
they can?
Because the credit reporting agencies went to the Congress and said, you know, we'd like, and I mean, I remember this story because it had to do with, for instance, and it's still a dirty bit of business. It was back in the relatively early aughts. I remember because I was driving back and forth to Charleston every day, and I would listen to National Petroleum Radio.
and I remember this story. The insurance companies, you know, like, you know, you want to go out and buy car insurance. Well, mm-hmm. they wanted, and the data companies, Equifax, Experian, TransUnion, were all for it because it would mean more business for them because they get paid. You know, if all you're doing is collecting data, you're just, you know, you're just some weirdo hoarder, okay? You have to make money out of the data. And so insurance companies, I'm sure somebody at one of these goddamn data companies sold them on the notion, well, you know, Bill, what you know, those no goods that you insure that take away your money from you. I mean, look, bud, you're in the insurance business. You're not in the payout business. You're in the insurance business. That means taking money in. So you want to make sure that you can take in as much and pay out as little as possible. Well, we've got an algorithm over here that has predicted that people who are 15 and a half seconds late on their power bill are more likely to cost you money when by getting in car crashes. And the insurance companies go, so wait, if we paid you for those reports and we looked at their credit scores, we could charge them more because they're a higher risk? That's right, Bill. Damn. And so the Equifax creep and the insurance creep go hand in hand up to Congress and go, those goddamn consumers are ripping us off. And so now, you know, your insurance is scored according to how promptly you pay the power company or your gas bill. So, you know, they've built the business for themselves by leveraging because they've got the power to go to Congress and say, you know, we want to fuck those deadbeats a little harder, okay? Well, you know, they are. I mean, I like to call them voters. Sometimes I call them constituents, but deadbeats will do. Yeah, you should. I think we should let you do that. Absolutely.
And with the getting back to bankers, one of the things that they were talking about in the frontline piece was, let's say I'm writing checks, okay, and this is back in the days when checks were the going thing. More than online banking, but they would process your checks that you had written before they would process the deposits, even though you may have made the deposit before the checks arrived to be processed at the bank, okay? And that would create overdrafts, which would then create overdraft fees, and Well, see, I don't even have a bank account anymore. I haven't had a bank account of any type, like checking account, anything like that, since at least 2003. I refuse to deal with them. And it's not easy, but it is possible. You know? It's just insane what they can get away with.
In certain circumstances, it's goddamn annoying as hell. It really is. But it's a matter of paying,
if you don't pay the fucking power bill, they turn the fucking power off.
Yeah.
Okay. So how should that be part of your credit score? Do I have electricity? Well, that obviously means I pay the power company. Do I have gas? That obviously means that I'm pretty good at paying the goddamn gas company. But that doesn't make money for these predatory, you know, and they're not even predatory. You know, a wolf's a predator. A wolf goes out there and hunts its prey. You know, a goddamn grizzly stands in the middle of freezing fucking cold water and catches salmon. They're actually doing something. So to call them predatory is not entirely fair.
They're opportunistic.
No. I'm trying to be much more insulting than that. they are the financial equivalent of buzzards. A buzzard never does a goddamn thing to get what it eats. It just goes down and finds something, finds a carcass laying rotten and begins to pick at it.
Yeah.
A buzzard, you know, a jackal, a hyena, doesn't actually do any work. It just feeds off stuff that's already dead. You know, it's kind of like our national symbol, the eagle, the bald eagle. The bald eagle would much rather eat something that's already dead than having to go to the trouble of catching something that's alive. And as a metaphor for our country, it's also notable that the bald eagle never attacks anything its own size.
Well, speaking of that, I will never, ever forget the night I'm watching David Letterman, and he had one of the animal experts on, who brought a regulation-sized bald eagle to the Ed Sullivan Theater, and the object of the game was Dave was on the stage with the meat or whatever the eagle wanted to eat. The eagle was up in the balcony, and when the trainer gave the signal, the eagle swooped down from the balcony over the audience at the Ed Sullivan Theater to land on Letterman's outstretched arm to get the chunk of meat. Well, Punky, meanwhile, the way the place was situated, this was at the old place, he's right next to the TV, and he caught sight of that eagle swooping down from the balcony and went apeshit, batshit crazy.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. It traumatized that little guy for some hours afterwards. He cowered for free, and he hears me talking about it. He doesn't even like me to refer to it. He's pacing around agitatedly right now as I relate the story. But no, seriously, he was freaked out for at least some minutes after that. So hell, a bird Punky size compared to an eagle. I mean, Punky's a tasty little hors d'oeuvre, on a Ritz cracker, you know.
Obviously, you're classy and no French. Yes. Yeah, yes. I was thinking, as Darlene points out, I'm thinking of scavenger.
Scavenger, there's the word.
But I think there's an even more demeaning word for them, I don't care if he shows up in a goddamn Maybach, you know, I'd spit on the ground in front of the president of fucking Equifax, okay?
Yeah.
I mean, these are the kind of people that make revolutionaries revolutionary. All right.
But I mean, you've described the problem, you know, the situation that we're in. But my question is, sooner or later, some lawyer is going to have to figure out a way to go after these guys because of the...
Oh, God, there's like 60 class action suits already filed against them.
But I'm thinking in terms of these, not only the breach of the data, that's bad enough, but hopefully whatever investigation and legal action that occurs out of this, arises out of this, there certainly ought to be a light shined or reshone on the fact that they can get away with this stuff. You know, I've got a relationship with San Diego Gas and Electric, okay? Nowhere in the paperwork and nowhere in my understanding with SDG&E do any of these credit reporting agencies enter into it. It's never mentioned. It's like if I have an agreement with you, then the guy down the hall has no say in what goes on between the two of us. That's what I'm getting at.
And and by the way, another word I was looking for was parasite. Parasite.
Yeah, that's another good one.
These data collection operations are parasitic. And you know, the question's been put to me, well, you know, why aren't you infuriated about other data collectors like Yahoo and Google? Well, you know what? I'll get infuriated at them later, but right now we've got a problem with the ones who are parasitic and feed on us like economic carrion. Okay.
Yeah. And it's not even that problem. It's the problem that several layers beyond, or several steps beyond, where now your most personal financial information is out there in the wild, in the dark net, you know?
Yeah.
And I would feel bad for anybody who tries to assume my identity, financially speaking, because they're screwed six ways.
Well,
the thing is,
you can have good credit and it can go to shit overnight.
Oh, I know.
You've read Catch 22, haven't you?
Years ago.
Okay, but you still remember what a magnificent con artist Milo Minderbinder was?
Yeah.
If it's good for the company, it's good for the country, and everybody has a share. M&M Enterprises.
Yeah.
Chocolate covered cotton, bombing your own airfield, that sort of thing.
Yeah, sort of. Well, go ahead.
Well, you know, the whole idea of credit reporting agencies is Heller-esque. Okay. Because it's all catch 22. Because if you let's say you've got a legitimate dispute with one of these outfits, and you know you're in the right, well, you call them up and you get some dude in India who says, "Thank you for calling Equifax. I am terribly, terribly happy to unhelp you."
Yeah.
And you sit there and you try to explain to him, "Listen, you know, the bill was paid, and you know this reference is here." Well, okay, I will file a dispute for you. And then they do. And then it comes back and they tell you, "Equifax has reviewed your dispute and find that you're wrong." Well, how did you find out I was wrong? Well, we asked the company that says you owe them money if you owe them money. And they said, "Yeah, you owe them money." "Yeah, but I got the proof right here that I don't." Well, that's too bad, because they say you do. And they win. You know why they win, Scott? Because they're paying. And the customer is always right. And you're not the customer. The goddamn creditor is. Who's not even a fucking creditor in the first place. And you'd think... You would think that we could address... I mean, we're not talking about rocket science here. We're not talking about brain surgery. We're talking about common sense regulation. Okay, we're talking... Look. If the Earth opened up tomorrow and swallowed Equifax, TransUnion, and Experian, one, I don't think there would be any net negative effects to the economy, and B, I don't think there'd be a whole lot of people out there weeping.
Well, see, that industry, years ago, and when I say years ago, I'm talking about at a minimum 50 or 60 years ago, and even earlier, credit reporting was a local concern. It wasn't until these three major credit reporting companies got into it on a national and even probably international basis that it's been rife with abuses. Back when it was the XYZ credit reporting agency who served your city or your region, They did the job responsibly, because they weren't trying to sell anything to anybody. They were simply trying to make sure of your creditworthiness so that local merchants would not be, you know, screwed over by, you know, a deadbeat. At least that's my understanding of it. And there are still regional and local credit reporting agencies, but they're teeny tiny compared to the, you know, TransUnion, Equifax, and what's the other one?
Experian.
See, they've changed their names also. I remember TRW was the original name of one of them.
Was that the one that's Experian now?
I can't remember. I know that the TRW, and Lord knows what TRW stood for. Because it's been so long since I, you know, was exposed to the information. But it was, and then the business of, hell, I can't remember the last time I had a credit card, okay? The business of what, when you get your credit card in the mail, or you come on to sign up for a credit card, look at the postmark. It'll either be from Delaware or from one of the Dakotas. I think it's North Dakota, or it might be South Dakota. And how that came to be was the industry hooked up with the Congress or certain senators and congressmen back in the 70s, I guess, when interest rates were so high, there was no way for them to make money extending credit because of the usury laws being so restrictive, limiting the amount of interest that could be paid. And I forget the governor's name, but it was the governor of whichever Dakota it was, who got in bed with them and said, well, hell, we'll just have the legislature raise the usury rate to some astronomical number, and that will make this state an attractive place for you to move your headquarters, which is what they did. Which is why all the credit card come-owners, virtually all of them, come from whichever Dakota that is. It's a scam. I mean, it's hell. Even the Bible says not to, you know, charge an unfair interest on the lending of money, but. Shit, since when do these fuckers care about anything the Bible had to say about it?
And I don't know, maybe TRW, what is now Experian used to be TRW. I mean, this is an education in terms of how corporate culture gets out of hand. I'm just looking at the wiki on it. What became TRW started out, get this, in 1901 as, and I love this, Cleveland Cap Screw Company.
Their motto: "There's no cap on how much we can screw you."
And right, and they're still screwing people 116 years later.
There you go. And you got to figure they were somehow hooked up with the Rockefellers.
Well, no.
He was in Cleveland, Standard Oil, back in the olden days.
It gets really interesting because eventually they get into aircraft. Mm-hmm. And then they get pulled in for the design of the first ICBM.
Well, there you
go.
So,
you know, the same people who are doing credit reporting to one degree or another, we're also had a degree of responsibility in making the world unsafe for humanity. I mean,
well,
that
inspired the new motto: "We'll get you one way or another." You know, you'll go up in all suffused in an incandescent glow from one product line, or we'll have you out on the street living in a cardboard box over a hot air grate. Doesn't matter to us. You know, we'll get you one way or another. Well, what did Cleveland Screw and Cap do? Were they like a nut and bolt industry of some sort? Or?
Yes.
Jesus.
They were just a little tool and die company. And then because the nature of corporate law in this country, you know, it used to be you had a charter, and the charter would state explicitly what the corporation was going to do. And then along the way, some wiseacre decided to add in the section of the corporate charter that describes what the corporation's going to do. It is, we're going to make caps and screws, comma, and other lawful endeavors.
Yeah.
Or for other lawful purposes. So as long as it wasn't against the law, Cleveland Cap and Screw could decide to cap your ability to borrow money and screw you every day of your life.
And initially, even if it was questionable, if not totally against the law, they would use their growing influence in the state legislature or the national legislature to get that law changed to put them in technical compliance.
Right.
Right? I mean, that's pretty much how the game is played, you know? Jesus. God, you're going to get me saying, we're all screwed, Bob. Before long,
that may have been one of the grimmest nights in recent horn history.
Yeah, the only thing missing was, you know, that cartoon dog Droopy The only thing missing was the droopy voice.
We're all screwed.
Yeah, there
screwed.
We go.
Yes.
Wallace Wimple of that was the character on, what was it? Fibber McGee and Molly had that voice. That's where I first heard it. God. And while I'm thinking of old radio shit, happy anniversary to the CBS Radio Network. 90 years old today. What's left of it?
Really?
Yes.
I remember late at night driving home from the from my own radio job as a pimply-faced gospel radio DJ, listening to CBS Radio Theater.
Oh, yeah. You know all those episodes? There's a website that has all those episodes online.
That was
for
great
free.
Stuff.
Oh, God. And all the actors and actresses and directors and writers responsible for those, the CBS Radio Mystery Theater was the name of it. Oh, man, I remember that, too. Do you remember Herb Jepko out of Salt Lake City on KSL, the nightcap?
No, see, that's way, you know, no. Anything that started, the only K I ever got in my listening area was KMOX.
Yeah, but he was, when I first became aware of him, was similar to you, driving home from my radio job after 6 hours of music, and shitty music at that, my very first radio job.
Oh, don't even get me started.
In 73. I had an hour's drive from the station back to my parents' house where I was living, and I was looking for anything that wasn't music. And I happened upon WHAS Louisville, a big 50,000-watt blowtorch, and between KSL in Salt Lake and WHAS in Louisville, they would blanket pretty much the continental United States in the dead of night, from midnight until, I don't know, 4 or 5 a.m. And it was a call-in show, and you could only call in once every 2 weeks. And the only rules were you had 5 minutes to talk, and you could talk about any subject under the sun except religion and politics. And it had a big following there for a few years.
Oh, there was great stuff out there. And you know, the same thing I was saying about spoken word versus written word, you can say to a certain extent about radio versus television. There's actually more brain power being expended in listening to radio than mm-hmm. there is in just passively staring at a screen.
Well, and because it's an unlimited budget in terms of sets, you know, you like Stan Freberg said, you can do stuff on radio that would be prohibitive cost-wise on television. Simply because in the audio medium, the medium of imagination, it's all in the listener's imagination and mind's eye.
Right. And see, one, I think I've mentioned this before. Once upon a time, I had this dream of the Horn Shakespeare Radio Theater.
No, I didn't hear about that.
it never went anywhere because, but I wanted to just because, well, I mean, I'm the guy who wants to see the Tempest performed with the people on the island as hillbillies. You know, I want Caliban to be a hillbilly. I want Ariel to be a hillbilly. I want Prospero and Miranda to be hillbillies. But you know, I think like that. But no, the idea was that we would, you know, we'd find people who had, you know, passing decent microphones. And so we'd put up Hamlet, and you'd cast people just like you'd cast the play. Only their job would be it almost like recording animation.
Yeah,
you know, at best, someone who's voicing animation has the animation running in front of him or her, and you know does the voice work. Well, the idea here would be that everybody would read the play and get the idea of what it was that was going on. And so, let's say, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern. Well, you could be Rosencrantz, and I could cast it, and we could cast, Todd in South Carolina as Guildenstern. You'd never have to be together, but you would record your lines, and Todd would record his separately, and then you mix the whole damn thing down, and you add in the sound effects and things like that, and you come up with Hamlet in a radio format. Only done as a completely open source affair.
I'm sure that there's as you were describing the process, immediately to mind came Tracy, the lady cab driver. And I hope she doesn't take this the wrong way, but she strikes me as a fiery wench. And certainly there's a part in one of Shakespeare's pieces where she would just
I don't know who you think about that. Of course, the strongest Shakespearean female role is either Kate in The Taming of the Shrew or Lady Macbeth. And Lady Macbeth isn't just strong, she's fucking evil. So you'd need a really strong woman who could be, evil. Lady Macbeth is a goddamn paleo conservative, teabagger, trumpansy, maggots Republican. Okay, all she wants is power, and it doesn't matter how she gets it.
Oh hell, I can think a couple of names in Republican politics.
No. I'm thinking who, but and we're not going to insult anybody, but that's how you cast that. It sounds like Punky's into it.
Are there any birds in the works of Shakespeare, other than Romeo and Juliet? That's not the lark. That's the.
I think there's a reference to a nightingale here and there, but anyway, we've run rather far afield. But it was a good conversation, Scott, and it sounds like Punky's enjoyed it too.
He certainly has, and keep up the good work. That's all I can say.
All right, you take care, Scott.
All right, Bob.
Bye now. Our buddy Scott calling from San Diego. And lest you think that I don't have them, I do. Let's close out with a few more ands, if you don't mind. And for closing out with a few more ands, let's run over to Ohio. A township, Franklin Township in Ohio. And Ohio's kind of a big place, so I don't know where Franklin Township is. But Franklin Township has a volunteer fire department. But they're not completely volunteers. They do get paid when their services are needed. Well, the services of one member of the Franklin Township, Ohio volunteer fire department are not going to be needed for a little while. He's going to be suspended. Tyler Roysden is. Why? Because social media. Because there's something about social media that just brings out the inner Klansman in your average maggots, Republicans, what have you. He got on Facebook. The remark has since been removed, but he said that as a firefighter, if he was forced to choose between saving the life of a dog or an African-American man in a burning building, he, volunteer firefighter for Franklin Township, Ohio, Tyler Roysden, would save the dog because, and these are his own words from Facebook, quote, one dog is more important than a million, that word, unquote. Fire Chief Steve Bishop, when he heard about it, said,
Recently, a Franklin Township volunteer firefighter posted unacceptable remarks on social media. And it was immediately... Fire Chief Steve Bishop immediately contacted the firefighter and directed the comments be removed. Firefighter was suspended without pay till the Board of Township Trustees could meet to determine a course of action. Holy Jesus. So, they're going to have a township committee meeting in Franklin Township, Ohio, to determine whether Tyler Royston should be allowed to continue to be a volunteer firefighter after he voluntarily, see what I did there, with no egging on, stated that he would save a dog from a burning building before he would save an African-American man because one dog is more important than a million. That word. And there has to be a course of action determined by the Board of Township Trustees. Because termination requires a vote by the Board of Trustees. I don't have an update saying that Tyler Royston is going to forego that that opportunity for that hearing because, well, who knows? He may have more he may have more allies there on the Franklin, Ohio Township Board of Trustees, and shucks, he may not be eliminated as a volunteer firefighter. Maybe he'll just get called on the fires that involve white people or dogs. Yeah. Well, you're getting into a gray area there, Asa. What if it's a black dog? Is it still worth a million? Well, you can't judge a dog by the color of his fur. But Tyler Royston, volunteer firefighter for Franklin Township, Ohio, can judge people by the color of their skin. See how it works? Yeah. John in Central PA is with us. By the way, it looks like we're going to close the evening with a More In Monday goose egg, so we'll see what happens thereafter. Hey, John, what's happening?
Oh, hey, Bob. I know I don't have much time to talk or anything, but...
You got a rock solid 10 minutes.
Okay. Oh, I just wanted to check in and I'm kind of wondering why is it that the modern-day Republican Party is so reluctant to call out neo-Nazis and Klansmen, you know, who is, you know, essentially part of their base.
Why? Because they are but one. Yet, I think you just answered your own question. It's their base.
Right. Well, but when it comes to undoing everything that Obama has done, and which you know, entails taking away people's health care, they jump on that. And you know what? That actually panders to that faction of their base, of the neo-Nazis and Klansmen. They love it. They love the fact that they're undoing everything he does, and they love brutalizing the country or the people that, you know, benefit from the Affordable Care Act. And, you know, what they're doing is very vicious, man. I mean, because, you know, last week, you know, and I'm not trying to be like a woe is me, but, you know, last week I'm you know, just looking at my news feed and stuff like that. And here it is that they might have that Obamacare repeal is gaining momentum. And, man, my heart dropped. The fear just keeps
because this is
the anxiety.
I mean, yeah, you can look it up. This is worse than anything they have done thus far.
Yes, and it has just as much of a likelihood, if not more, of passing. You know, and you know, it's. I mean,
right,
this vendetta that they have against the poor. I mean, it's
well,
it's,
and John McCain has decided, and that. John McCain has decided that once was enough, and he may support this bill.
And that right there is it. That's it. Once he, I mean, if he's on board with this bill, it's going to be law because.
And Lisa Murkowski, in case you were wondering, Lisa Murkowski, who was another critical no vote, she's decided that, well, she's kind of on the fence too, and maybe she could be convinced as well.
Yeah, I know, and this is the worst bill. So all those other ones where they were so principled, where people were giving them so much credit for voting no on this other ones was all bullshit anyway. It didn't matter fuck all, because now they're going to be voting for the worst one. And I don't know, you can look this up. I'm pretty sure I saw this a couple of times, that they're actually eliminating the subsidy program on this one.
Oh, absolutely. One of the things that's gone from this is the subsidies for the for-profit insurance companies.
Yeah. You know, so basically instead of, you know, like me, I pay $100 a month for my, because I'm on Obamacare, you know.
And I pay, let's
$100
see,
a month.
I've got a list here. The Cassidy-Graham bill would allow an insurance company to eliminate birth defects from coverage, or they could just charge humongous amounts to cover a baby born with a life-threatening ailment. And, of course, it creates more uninsured people, millions, tens of millions. And like I said, it has a greater effect on states that accepted the Medicaid expansion because it eliminates Medicaid. Hello.
Yeah. Like you were saying earlier, it's punishing those states. And, I was telling one of the, you know, people that I know that are progressive, but they're real purity type progressive, you know, voted for Jill Stein. And I'm not trying to rehash that. You know, they did what they did. I don't want to play the blame game because I kind of find that to be a waste of – I find it to be counterproductive. So, you know, but, you know, that's a discussion for another time. But, you know, I said it's – you know, they said something, they made a comment to the effect of, well, maybe they should just pass this repeal bill so that we can get single payer eventually. And I'm thinking,
oh, Jesus, we're back to Susan Sarandon again, aren't we?
And this person is, like it's a burn.
Well,
even the
lotus has to bloom from the mud.
Right.
You know, goddamn simpletons. So we're just gonna gut the insurance system, and we're gonna throw a few bodies up on the blood-soaked altar of conservatism, and the precious ones are going to sit there and say, well, see, you know, after a few million people die, you know, then we'll see the smartness of having single payer.
You're exactly right, Bob. That's about the size of it, man. You hit it right, the nail right on the head. And so we have two bills in the Senate, two healthcare measures. One of them repeals the Affordable Care Act and replaces it with a brutal system that's going to kick tens of millions of people off of their health care. Another one essentially repeals Obamacare and replaces it with a system that not only gives everyone health care, but dental and vision too. I mean, the whole country should be jumping on something like that. Now,
you just hang on a minute there, John.
Hang on.
I don't want no tifuses if it's going to mean that they're communist, socialist medicine tifuses.
You're right. See, the one that has more likelihood of passing is the one that takes people's health care away. That is a caricature of where we are at right now in this country. That's a caricature of it. That's exactly where we're at, where what doesn't make sense is what's going on right now, and what should be happening is nowhere in sight. You know what I'm saying? And that's – I just can't – you know, I just feel very what's the term? I always have like brain farts when I try to think of, you know, certain words, but it has me very discouraged, I guess would be the right term. I just don't see any, you know, I think it's too late, Bob. I think it's too late for anything.
I don't like being there. I don't like going there. but you're not going to get any pushback from me because I'm coming more and more to the conclusion that this country is circling the drain.
Yeah, you know, when I say, you know, and then you had, and I look, Nancy Pelosi's okay with me. What did you hear about that? Did you hear that audio of Chuck Schumer going, "He likes me. I think he likes me."
Yeah, well, he likes us, or at least he likes me. Yeah, and the fact of the matter, but the fact of the matter is, that's true. He likes anybody who will pet him, who will stroke his little ego.
They're playing into that, which is, you know,
to the same extent. See, I won't do what the precious little perfection progressives you were describing are willing to say. That, you know, I got a note from Steve in New York who says, "And what, the deaths from eliminating the ACA are going to be called healthcare martyrs, really?" And I think I said it to you the other night. I'm not willing to say that my political ideology demands that a bunch of young people who were brought here as babies climb up on the blood-soaked Republican altar for my political purity. And I'm goddamn sure not going to say that about Americans' health care either. But somewhere along the way, no matter what I say or do not say, John, somewhere along the way, the American people have got to say it too. And right now, you've got 33% of this country or more who, I mean, all kidding aside, is like, "Well, no, I'd rather die of cancer if I had to live and be cured by socialism."
I know.
And they'll say that about themselves, but what they're really saying, John, is, "I'd rather they die of cancer than be cured by socialist medicine." Not socialized medicine, socialist medicine. That's what they're saying.
Like, you said the other day that me...
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
No.
Oh, I'm sorry. I do that stupid shit where I get a thought in my head and I just...
No, go. Ask. What did I say the other day?
Well, you know, you said the other day, it's not socialized medicine. A lot of people say that. They'll be like, "Oh, it's socialized medicine. It's like, it's government-run medicine." It's like, no, it's not. Government-run medicine is like what you said, is when the doctors are working for the government. Everybody, the whole thing is ran by the government. All it is it's underwritten by the government.
When the government writes the doctor a check for the doctoring the doctor does, like with the VA.
Exactly. Yes, and look at this bill here, the Medicare for All bill. The spending for that is 1/3 of what we spend on military. And you know, a guy who's going to be running for state rep next year that I know, he's a really cool guy, real fun, progressive, and he's going to be running for state rep, not in my district, but the district over. And he at the healthcare, the town hall, the put people first healthcare town hall for the department, Pennsylvania Department of Insurance, the one where their commissioners didn't show up. All three of them had a different excuse, and so he was saying, you know, this is ridiculous. We spend so much money on military, and they're trying to say that we can't spend money on healthcare for people. No, and I try to go back. I always go back to this one point. Fascism. That's fascism. I mean, just last week, my parents were watching America's Got Talent, okay? And there was a group of people that were there, that were on stage, very talented. I mean, I'm not trying to take away from them. You know, they were very talented people, but they were in military uniforms, and they were singing, like, America-type songs. It seems so Orwellian to me, man. It really did, and even my dad, who's a big military guy, said, you know, if they weren't in uniform, they wouldn't be on this stage. They wouldn't even know nobody would know who the hell they were. You know what I mean? And because they had to be in uniform, and they were in uniform, military uniform, America's Got Talent's producers or whoever decides to do all that shit had them right there on the stage, and I don't know if they won the thing or they're going to the finale or whatever, but you know, they sung all these like America the Beautiful and shit like that. And it just seemed very Orwellian to me, man. You know, I just, and I go back to, you know, and right there, I'm looking at the 14 points of fascism, and I was like, bam, right there, number
right, well,
four
I mean,
or whatever
sure,
it is.
Sure, sure. And look, at the, militarization of a football game. And if you will direct your, fans, if you will direct your attention to the dome of the stadium, which encloses this building, you might hear outside a group of what the, flying over in defense of freedom. And meanwhile, there's, you know, a flag the size of the entire football field unfurled on the, and we've been conditioned to think that that's normal. Okay, it's not. Oddly enough, all over the world, people manage to have sporting events at which they have a really good time that are not turned into frenzies of fucking nationalism, but the brand of the NFL, this is something going way, 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 way back in time, to when I was little, Pete Rozelle realized that his surest path to building the NFL brand was to wrap it in the flag. So, you
right.
know, for generations now, you've had people filling stadiums watching other people ruin their futures with head injuries and feeling really good about it because they sang the national anthem first.
Yep. Yeah, it's Orwellian,
but Colin Kaepernick is the problem.
Yeah, exactly. An Antifa, you know, like that kind of shit. I saw, came across a meme that was really, really funny of Colin Kaepernick. It had a picture of Colin Kaepernick, and then it had a picture of Marv from Home Alone 2 when he got electrocuted.
Yeah.
And they look like a lot of like, it's kind of funny. It's not racist or anything like that. It's not a political thing. It's just a meme that's just kind of making light of the whole situation that was circulating right around the time that when he first did his kneeling thing. And yeah, it's really funny though. It actually is kind of funny. But you know, back to this, it's just, you know, the whole healthcare thing really has me worried. And you know, I'm cool with Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer hammering out a deal with the debt ceiling and DACA and everything, but I mean, are they going to use their mad negotiating skills when it comes to healthcare? I mean, I don't see them making any effort to do negotiations for that though either, you know what I mean? And that kind of concerns me too.
Everything concerns me. Like I've said before, I get up now and, you know, oh, look, I woke up not dead.
Yeah.
And I do. I the first thing I do, you know, before even the morning cup of decaf, it's a trip out there to the media world to see if the missiles have flown yet. Not because I think that Kim Jong bad haircut is going to nuke the United States. I think he'd like to nuke Japan. And probably in some of his darker moments, he'd like to nuke China because he's tired of being shoved around by them. But the fact of the matter is, he's not going to push that button because he doesn't have enough of an arsenal. On the other hand,
right.
However, I don't know what's going. I don't know what the spirochetes are saying to each other. Not parakeets. Spirochetes are saying to each other inside Marcus Aurelius's vestige of a brain.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know, while we're at it, just a quick mention, since it's Moran Monday, Moran Melanoma, who's going to make anti-bullying a centerpiece of her time as First Lady. Well, how's that going, Mel? You know,
yeah.
seeing how the hubby's out there posting bullying memes against Hillary Clinton. How's that going, Mel? You freaking hypocrite.
See, and that's where the media, you know, they have no shame, but, you know, they were just ranting and raving about last week, oh, he's becoming a bipartisan president. He's actually interested in unifying the country now and shit. How is he doing that when he's alienating 3 million more people that voted for him? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
There's a lot more people voted for Hillary Clinton than they did him, and by doing that, he's rehashing it, the last election, and he's alienating them. And that's not bringing the country together. I don't believe anything that people say. when it comes to that shit. When they start saying, like, oh, he's acting presidential, I say bullshit. Every time.
Well, look,
I'll
tomorrow
bullshit.
He's going to read off a pill. And we got to get out of here because people want to go over and listen to Malloy. Tomorrow, you know, get your anti-emetics handy. Because you're going to want to vomit. And it's not because he's going to speak to the UN. And chances are he will actually read what's on the teleprompter. That seems to be one of the things that John Kelly, the chief of staff, the old Marine, has accomplished. That Donnie, when we put something on the teleprompter for you, it means we think it's exactly what needs to be said. So you just read it, okay, Donnie? And so tomorrow he's going to read off a teleprompter, and it's not going to sound, you know, way out there batshit crazy. It's just going to sound Republican, bellicose, belligerent, fascist crazy. And CNN and MSNBC and CNBC and Fox and CBS and ABC and PBS and everybody under the goddamn sun is gonna fall all over themselves talking about, well, you know, Donald Trump went to the United Nations, and gosh, didn't he sound presidential? And hey, maybe this is the pivot we've all been waiting for. And you know, those simple people. My God, you could probably sell the Brooklyn Bridge to him 15 times each, because he'll be back to crazier than a sprayed roach at a decon party, because he can go zero to crazy in like 1.3 seconds.
Yeah, exactly.
So we're going to get out of here, but it's been a great conversation, I wanted to make sure that I gave you enough time to get stuff off your chest.
Oh, good. Yeah, appreciate it, man.
No worries at all, man. Listen, you have yourself a very, very good evening, and we'll talk again soon.
Yep, absolutely.
All right. Take it easy, John.
Yep, you too.
And that's our buddy John calling from Central PA. So that's it. Yeah, I ran over by a few minutes. My apologies, but, conversation radio and whatever. Back tomorrow with Titanic Tuesday. Let's see what the subscribers do, and hopefully we won't lay a goose egg again tomorrow night. But thanks, everybody. Thanks for being here. Thanks for participating. Thanks for sharing your precious finite time engaging in this little ongoing conversation whose anniversary is coming up in a matter of, 1 month and 6 days. Yeah, 5 days. 1 month and 5 days. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Midweek Utility, Pinch Hit Chat Room moderator Steve from Georgia Stan, all-around great guy. And thanks to longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky. Thank you both. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. Coal River Mountain Watch on Facebook, and at Coal, C-O-A-L, River, R-I-V-E-R, Mountain, M-T-N, at Coal River, M-T-N, on Twitter. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.